Today is Tuesday, November 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. U.S. President Biden goes on the road to promote his $1 trillion infrastructure plan, saying it sends a strong message to Americans.
Let's remember this day. Let's remember we can't come together. Most of all, let's remember what we've got done for the American people when we do come together.
Steve Bannon turns himself in on federal contempt charges, but says he's not giving up without a fight.
This is going to be the misdemeanor from hell for Merrick Garland, Nancy Pelosi, and Joe Biden.
And explosions rock Uganda's capital. We'll have these stories and more next. We start off in Uganda, where two explosions near the central police station and parliament in the capital, Kampala, have left at least three people dead. Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
The blast Tuesday morning shattered windows and left cars burning on the streets of Uganda's capital, Kampala. Two lifeless bodies were visible near Uganda's parliament and one outside the central police station as security closed off the area. The deputy director of Uganda's National Referral Hospital, Mulago, Rosemary Byanyima, says they received 27 injured, seven of them in critical condition. This is the third explosion in Kampala since October, when a bomb at a restaurant killed one person and injured five others. Ugandan authorities have not yet assigned blame for Tuesday's blast. Past attacks have been claimed by Islamic State militants. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
U.S. President Joe Biden is going on the road Tuesday to promote his $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill that he signed into law on Monday. He called it a strong message to the American people, as well as to bitterly divided congressional lawmakers.
Let's remember this day. Let's remember we can't come together. Most of all, let's remember what we've got done for the American people when we do come together. I truly believe that 50 years from now, historians are going to look back at this moment and say, that's the moment America began to win the competition of the 21st century.
After months of trying to convince House lawmakers to get behind the legislation, Democrats had enough members, including 13 Republicans, to pass the scaled-down bill, which pays for new roads, bridges, and railways. The president also hopes the law will boost his popularity ratings, which have fallen in recent weeks. President Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping met Monday in a 3.5-hour virtual summit. There were no major breakthroughs, but the talks enabled the two leaders to engage on a number of sensitive issues between the two sides, including human rights, Taiwan, and trade. The White House called the talks respectful, straightforward, and open. Neither China nor the U.S. made any pledges. Steve Bannon, a longtime ally of former President Donald Trump, appeared in court on Monday for defying a congressional subpoena and is vowing to take the fight to the Biden administration. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani has more.
They took on the wrong guy this time, okay?
Bannon spoke outside a Washington courthouse hours after surrendering to federal authorities. The Justice Department last week indicted him on two counts of criminal contempt for ignoring subpoenas from the House panel investigating the Capitol insurrection.
This is going to be the misdemeanor from hell for Merrick Garland, Nancy Pelosi, and Joe Biden.
Bannon says he's going on offense against what he calls the Biden regime. He did not enter a plea and is due back in court Thursday after being released without bail. Sagar Magani, Washington.
French police are dismantling an illegal migrants' campsite in a northern coastal area amid renewed tensions between France and Britain on the migrant issue. Reporter Catherine Field in Paris tells me that more than 1,000 people are being evacuated and transferred to local shelters.
The camp itself is situated very close to the French-Belgian border, right in the northeast corner of France, literally just about 35 kilometers across the water from the UK, which is where many migrants are trying to get to. Now, this particular camp had just 400 people there back in September. Since then, we now see that there's been some 1,500 men, women, and children, mostly from the region of Kurdistan, who have set up a camp there. The camp itself is in the car park of a former industrial complex. Now, the police went in just before dawn. There were some 300 armed police, there was also gendarmes, there were also social welfare officials there, to break up the camp. They took away all of the tents. They took away a lot of the belongings of these people who'd been camped there. These people have now been moved to various facilities in the area around that border region just across the water from Great Britain.
What is the name of this campsite, and how long have these refugees or migrants been living there?
The camp is called the Grand Sainte, which is just the name of the region. There have been encampments in that area really for about the last 10 years, but they've become more in focus in the last year or so, because previously these would-be migrants had tried to get onto trains and buses and cars that were using the channel ports to get across to Britain. But they've been growing up along this area because a lot of the migrants have been trying to come across in very small boats across the English Channel. Now, so far this year, we know that 23,000 people have made it across to England, across to the other side of this very dangerous waterway. And when we just look at the last couple of days, last Thursday, 1,185 people made it across illegally that waterway. So that was a record for a single day. So they've been coming gradually more and more to that region. And of course, we are now really heading into winter. And that was the excuse that the French government official gave just a few hours ago. So it's getting really cold. These people are not safe there. And there are not just health concerns, but there are also safety concerns for them in this area.
And this all seems to have come about now on Tuesday as a result of some talks between some diplomats between France and Britain, the interior minister of France. Does it seem like that is the case?
It's always difficult to know. The French interior minister has said that this had nothing to do with his talks with his British opposite number earlier in the week. He said that these operations take a long time to organize, and it's got nothing to do with that. Certainly, there has been a lot of pressure on the French to do something about these encampments, which are clear for anyone to see. And it's pretty obvious why these people are there. They are there just to cross the channel. There are other places in France where people come across in much smaller numbers, particularly across the mountains between Italy and France. You see a lot of them on the roads there. But this one, it's so obvious that they are there with the hope of getting across the channel, where they believe that once they're in England, that they'll be able to work, that it's much more of a possibility, particularly linguistically and for employment opportunities, to work there, you know, whether it be legally or illegally.
Where are most of these migrants from? Are they from Africa mostly?
At the moment, it's a big mix. You get a lot who have come from the region of Kurdistan and the Middle East. You get some Syrians, but you also get quite a number who come up, particularly from Eritrea. You get quite a lot from Sudan, as well as Nigeria, and pretty much those areas along the Sahel is what we've been seeing.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She was speaking to me from Paris on Tuesday. When Cameron Mohammed traveled with his family to the Belarus capital, Minsk, last month from their home in Iraq, they went as tourists, but they weren't there to sightsee. Their aim was to seek asylum in the European Union. Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson has that report.
Cameron Mohammed watches a video of his family in a forest on Belarus's border with Poland. The Iraqi father of three traveled to Minsk from Iraq last month on a tourist visa, but his intention was always to seek a better life for his family in Europe. Days after arriving in Belarus's capital, they headed for the border where their ordeal began. He describes how the Belarusian authorities helped them in a game of cat and mouse against the Polish authorities.
The Belarusian police were saying, "You have to go. There is no chance for you to stay. You have to go." Each night they would divide us in groups and put us in their cars. Some nights we would go once, other nights twice. They would arrest us and forbid us to enter. They would push us back on the other side of the fence. Then the Belarusian police would take us in their cars and bring us back to the Polish border.
Mohammed is one of thousands of people provided with tourist visas with the help of travel agencies in the Middle East, working with tour operators in Belarus. Mohammed's account, which has not been independently verified by Reuters, adds fuel to the EU's accusation that Belarus is orchestrating the migrant crisis. Belarus has repeatedly denied the accusation. Poland and Lithuania have produced documents seen by Reuters that they say show how at least one Belarusian state-owned travel company made it easy for would-be migrants to visit from May. At the same time, a state-owned carrier more than doubled flights on a route popular with asylum seekers. Hazhar Hoseya is the deputy director of Asma Air and Travel Company, which provides airport services in Iraq.
We see the Belarusian visa on the passport, or there's an invitation that allowed you to get a visa on arrival. But we cannot prevent people, because they say he's going to Dubai and he has a visa for Dubai.
Mohammed and his family eventually made it to Poland, but their stay was brief. On October the 31st, they were deported back to their home in northern Iraq. Their story is a reminder that spending thousands of dollars and risking lives are no guarantee of a better future in Europe. On Monday, the EU said it would impose sanctions on airlines that fly migrants into Belarus as part of a package of new measures against the country.
That was Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson. Kenyan security agencies are searching for three convicted terror suspects escaped from a prison in Nairobi on Monday. One of the escapees was involved in an attack on a university in 2015 that killed nearly 150 people. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Kenyan security agencies are searching for three convicted terror suspects who escaped from a prison in Nairobi Monday. One of the escapees was involved in an attack on Garissa University in 2015 that killed nearly 150 people. The three men escaped from Kamiti Prison, the largest maximum security prison in Kenya. Police on Tuesday arrested seven prison wardens in connection with the escape. Police spokesperson Bruno Shioso says the jailbreakers are still at large and the arrested wardens are helping with the investigation into how the men were able to flee.
So all we can do is question people with the local information to cooperate with us. Now we are still under active investigations. We also keep to know about what exactly happened. So in the fullness of time, we should be able to share with the public once the investigations are over.
The three convicts include Musharraf Abdallah, who was convicted of attempting to attack the parliament in 2012, Joseph Juma Odhiambo, who was arrested in 2019 at the border between Kenya and Somalia for planning to join the terror group Al-Shabaab, and Mohammed Ali Abikar, who was convicted his role in for Al-Shabaab's attack on Garissa University in April 2015. That attack killed at least 148 people, most of them students. The three men were housed with more ordinary criminals inside Kamiti Prison, which Nairobi-based security analyst Richard Tuta says is a dangerous practice.
The moment you bring together these militants and with all other petty thieves, pickpocketers and all that, it is very easy for them to use the gaps that exist and the security levels to escape. These are people with resources. These are people who are well-trained. These are people with good networks in and outside the correctional facilities. So all those create a very conducive environment for them to escape.
Some terror convicts and suspects awaiting justice have been accused of radicalizing other prisoners. Police spokesperson, she also says, the escape has prompted police to review the handling of terror suspects and convicts.
We are trying to review, working very closely through the multi-agency framework, working very closely with the prisons, just to review the security as well, all the prisons, including the police facilities that host criminals.
The government is offering a reward of $550,000 for information leading to the capture of the escape convicts, who they warn are dangerous. She also warned the public against taking the law into their hands. In October, a mob killed a man who escaped from prison. Masten Wanjala had confessed to killing 10 children. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
In Poland, tensions are heating up at the border with Belarus. Border forces say migrants attacked them with stones, so they responded with water cannons. The Border Guard agency posted video on Twitter showing a cannon being aimed across the border at a group of migrants in a makeshift camp. Poland's defense ministry said its soldiers and other border guards were attacked. The ministry also said that Belarusian forces tried to destroy fencing along that border. Poland's parliament is set to debate a legislative proposal that would restrict the ability of citizens to move in the area of the border with Belarus once a state of emergency comes to an end on the last day of the month. Drug maker Pfizer has signed an agreement with a UN-backed group that gives the green light to other manufacturers to make its COVID-19 treatment. The move could help make the pills available to more than half of the world's population. Tuesday, Pfizer said it's granting a license for the antiviral pills to the medicine's patent pool. The deal allows generic drug companies to make the pill for distribution in some 95 countries. It excludes some large countries with manufacturing capacity. Experts say reaching such a deal before Pfizer's pill has been authorized could help end the pandemic more quickly. Germany's pipeline network regulator says it suspended the procedure to certify the operator of a new pipeline that would bring Russian gas to Germany because of a problem with the company's status under German law. Construction of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline wrapped up earlier this year but is not operating just yet. It's a contentious project, which Ukraine and the U.S. have opposed. Russia has said it could speed up natural gas supplies once German regulators allow the pipeline to start operating. It's not clear to what extent Tuesday's decision will hold up operations. British police have released four men arrested Monday by detectives investigating a homemade bomb explosion inside a taxi in Liverpool. Police identified the suspected bomber who died in the incident as a 32-year-old man who came to Britain as an asylum seeker several years ago. The blast tore through vehicles outside Liverpool Women's Hospital Sunday morning. Police initially called it a terrorist act, but are still trying to figure out the motive. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Carol Van Dam. U.S. officials said Tuesday a Russian anti-satellite weapons test against one of its own targets has generated debris that could be dangerous to astronauts on the International Space Station and other activities in outer space. Russia denies the accusation. Reuters correspondent Libby Hogan has this report.
Russia launched an anti-satellite weapons test against its own satellite on Monday, causing over 1,000 pieces of debris. The U.S. State Department spokesperson, Ned Price, sounded the alarm, calling the test reckless and a risk to the International Space Station, where astronauts and cosmonauts are on board.
Russia's dangerous and irresponsible behavior jeopardizes the long-term sustainability of outer space and clearly demonstrates that Russia's claims of opposing the weaponization of space are disingenuous and hypocritical.
The Russian military and Ministry of Defense were not immediately available for comment. A message posted on Twitter by the Russian space agency said the station was in the green zone and played down the risk. The seven-member space station crew, four U.S. astronauts, a German astronaut, and two Russian cosmonauts were directed to take shelter in their docked spaceship capsules for 2 hours after the test. That's according to NASA. Anti-satellite tests in space aren't a new thing. The U.S. performed the first anti-satellite tests in 1959, when satellites were rare and new. Last April, Russia carried out another test of an anti-satellite missile. But these recent tests have raised questions about the long-term sustainability of space operations, essential to commercial activities, banking, and GPS services. Officials have said that space will increasingly become an important domain for warfare.
That was Reuters correspondent Libby Hogan. With its red and yellow rock formations, the Raman crater in Israel's Negev desert has been compared to the surface of Mars. Six astronauts from around the world recently spent a month deep in the desert to simulate a mission to Mars. The goal was to learn more in the quest to make human travel to Mars a reality. For VOA, Linda Gradstein visited the mission in the crater and has this report.
For the first time after 30 days of isolation, six international astronauts emerged from their space station without protective spacesuits. They had just completed a simulated mission to Mars in Israel's Ramon crater, whose red desert terrain resembles a Martian landscape.
In the morning when you wake up and look outside the small windows and you see this red landscape and nobody there and you can't go outside and only communication is only with the time delay, you start to feel really isolated and really far away pretty soon. And then when you step outside of the airlock in the suit and hear your breath and your breathing and the communication and everything, it feels really realistic. And of course you still know that you're not on Mars, but you can really imagine what it would feel like.
The Amadi 20 mission, sponsored by the Austrian Space Forum and hosted by the Israeli Space Agency, involved more than 20 scientific experiments. The astronauts practiced exploring the terrain in spacesuits weighing 50 kilos, but the astronauts also had to deal with earthly tasks like plumbing.
Even the problems that we found, for example, let's say we had some technical issues with maybe the toilet, for example, that we need to fix because that's what we have. And the same would be on Mars, that you need to fix your own issues. You're kind of on your own, and it's not easy to get an extra toilet into Mars.
The director of the Austrian Space Forum praised the astronauts and says the first human to walk on Mars is already born.
And for those people, this building behind me, the most modern, most complex Mars simulation station on this planet as we speak, will be one of their first stepping stones in a ship voyage that is yet to be undertaken.
And this mission, he said, has brought that journey to Mars closer than it has ever been before. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, the Ramon Crater, Israel.
Burkina Faso recently accepted its first female pilot into the Air Force. In this report for VOA, Henry Wilkins meets Honorine Moyenga as she prepares to fly and discusses her hope to inspire others.
Since she was a child, Honorine Moyenga had dreamed of piloting an aircraft. After she graduated from school, the Air Force offered to sponsor her flight school training, so she went for it. The fact that there were no other female pilots in the Burkina Faso Air Force at the time did not stop her. She says, I kept this dream, I nurtured it, and as soon as the Air Force gave me the opportunity to realise it, I did not hesitate. She also says, I took my chance and here I am, a pilot. That was 7 years ago, and now she's a full-fledged transport pilot for the Air Force and plays an active role in the country's battle against terror groups linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. She says as the first female military pilot in Burkina Faso, she doesn't feel she has faced any more obstacles than a man would, except perhaps more pressure to perform. Moyenga says when you're the only female in men's circles, all eyes are on you. Your work is scrutinised very closely and you have to work harder than the others to prove that you're capable of piloting, just like the men. Moyenga's commanding officer says he has not treated her any differently than other pilots. Captain Sana Saidu says at the level of the squadron, where they carried out the operational activities, she was treated the same as the men, so integration was easy. Statistics on the number of women in the military internationally are scarce, but the United Nations says that introducing women into the military is important for diversity and gender equality. Women can be especially effective on the front line in peacekeeping roles, since they're able to connect and build trust with other women in communities that may be hostile. Tensions between security forces in Burkina Faso and civilians often run high, with many civilians saying they're afraid of personnel who often come from different areas of the country and ethnic groups.
Having women in frontline roles out interacting with and around the community is a critical enabler of sustaining peace, really. Where we are dealing with insurgencies, we are dealing with different tribal groups on the ground, so it's really important.
At a university in Ouagadougou, female students say role models like Moyenga are encouraging them to pursue traditionally male jobs and contribute to the development of the country. Odette Somme says Moyenga is an inspiration for all women. She says we can only hope to do what she has done and to imitate her, even if it is not in piloting, but in other professions too. As for Moyenga, she says she now feels the weight of responsibility to perform and encourages women to go for roles traditionally held by men, whatever their profession. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of Nadia Taha and the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of the world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.